Today is the first Sunday of Lent, and we are beginning our journey together towards Holy Week and following Holy Week, of course, to Easter. So today's readings have that theme in them, the theme of sin, and yet within the psalm and also that reading from Romans, we have the sense that all is not lost. Grace happens. Grace comes to us through the resurrection of Jesus. About 15 years ago, the people of St. Benedict's read a book together. Some of us joined in groups during the week. Others came to workshops on the weekend, and some people just read it on their own. However we did it, a significant number of us read Mysteries of Faith by Mark McIntosh. And it's well worth rereading. If you were not with us then, read it for the first time. The thing that really stood out for me in it was the idea that desire is God-given and can be holy. Up until then, I had thought of desire as something to be tamed, something to be ashamed of, something that if I prayed and perhaps fasted enough, I could be rid of. I don't know if my parents actually taught me I want doesn't get, but I certainly heard that wanting was bad and desire was to be guarded against. In the Garden of Eden, in that foundational myth that our ancestors developed to explain how things came to be, the first people were living in complete harmony with creation. Their relationship with God and the world around them was clear. They took care of the earth and they walked with God. There was, it seemed, no other way. Until their desire was aroused. Their desire was aroused for the fruit of the one tree of which they were not to eat. And so they ate, and everything changed. Everything changed because in eating that fruit, they had set themselves into rivalry with God. The serpent had said to the woman, God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God. It's driving me crazy. Sorry. We seem to have a short just in here. Try again. Everything changed because in eating that fruit, they set themselves into rivalry against God. The serpent had said to the woman, God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Suddenly, they saw each other with different eyes. They realized they were naked. Their innocence was changed into a knowledge of good and evil. No longer were they in a naive and simple relationship with God and their environment. Everything was different. Their desire led them to rivalry with God, and that quickly turned to blaming. It wasn't me, it was her. It wasn't me, it was the serpent. They were separated not just from the environment, not just from God, but also from one another. In setting themselves up as rivals to God, they set themselves up as rivals to each other. Their God-given desire became distorted, and it's only a few chapters before murder comes into the picture. Cain kills Abel because he envies Abel's apparent easy ability to please God. And within a few generations, systematic sin is so embedded that God sends the great flood to cleanse humanity and to try again. Now let's fast forward to Jesus and see how he deals with a similar situation to the one that Adam and Eve had. Jesus has been baptized. He has been marked as God's beloved son. He is in the desert learning what all this means and starting to understand his mission and his ministry. He has been fasting a very long time and he is famished. It's not surprising that he's hungry, and so he is tempted. Jesus is tempted to stray from the destiny that he has accepted as the beloved Son of God. Jesus is tempted by his desire for food and drink, not to obey God, but to set himself up as a rival to God. And this temptation continues. It would be much easier to get the things that his human desire wants, food, fame, and power, by separating himself from God the Father. But he does not do that. In Jesus, we see a new human. Human Mark 2, Human 2.0, however you want to think about that. A human who chooses to be obedient to God. And remember that obedience means to hear. So to hear God and to go with God. A human whose desire to serve God is much greater than his desire for all those things which seem so attractive to us. Human 2.0 does not desire rivalry with God, which is also rivalry with other humans, but to be aligned and filled with God's own desire. Now, I want to quote to you from the book I mentioned, Mysteries of Faith. Mark McIntosh writes, "Christians believe that behind all our desiring and working, that behind all our desiring and working secretly within it is God's own desire. The desire of the Father for the Son and the Son for the Father. The desire we call the Holy Spirit. That is what awakens our own desire and into which we are beckoned. Behind all the childhood stories of mistaken identities and long-lost parents who are finally found stands the very one who has truly loved us from all eternity, who knows every hair on our heads. It is this yearning Holy Spirit who ignites our desire and draws us into the life of Christ. Being filled with Christ's yearning desire to do God's will is the truly great adventure, the one in which we must risk all if we would find all, called and claimed at last as God's own beloved child. From this perspective, we desire because God desires, and we are made in God's image. So what is it that God desires? God desires the flourishing of all beings. God desires a universe living in harmony and in conscious relationship with God. This is different from the relationship in the Garden of Eden, where there was no other possibility. God longs for the children of God to choose to be in loving relationship with God, not in rivalry and competition. And that, of course, is the meaning of the ashes of Ash Wednesday. It is a reminder to us that we are not God, and an invitation for us to offer ourselves and our desires in obedience to God, which is exactly what Jesus did. And through his work, we are given the saving grace which can transform our own desires so that we choose to desire the world that God desires. We choose to let go of rivalries and blame. We choose to let go of separation and instead to be reconciled with God and with one another. And so through the yearning of the Holy Spirit, we are drawn into the life of Christ and become filled with that same yearning desire to do God's will. God's desire works in us so that what we come to desire is the fulfillment of God's plan for the universe. In the reading we heard from Romans, Paul is trying, I think, to talk about this very thing. The distorted desire of humanity from the earliest days has made us competitive and brought us into rivalry with God and with one another. This is the sin matrix. This is the true meaning of sin, which then gets played out in individual and corporate ways. Sin is not just what we did or what we didn't do, the sins of commission or omission. It is the whole orientation of distorted desire which sets us up against God and against each other. But the transformative love of God made available to us in Jesus offers the possibility of freeing our desire and making it holy, making it that which calls us ever deeper, deeper into the mystery, ever deeper into the heart of God. This is our choice. This is our free will. Will we choose to live out the desire of God or to set ourselves in opposition to God? Last week, I shared with you the story of Abba Lot as it was told to me. Today, I share it again with a slightly different ancient punchline. Abba Lot once said to his spiritual father, Abba Joseph, "Father, I fast as much as I can. I continue in prayer. I keep silence and contemplate. And also, through abstinence, guard myself from impure thoughts. What else can I do?" Then Abba Joseph stood up, raised his hands to heaven, and his 10 fingers shone like 10 flaming candles. He said, "If you desire, you can become completely flame."